Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Public sector employees like teachers or government workers no longer have to pay union dues or fees if they are not members of the unions that represent those workers. That's after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last month that said an Illinois teacher's First Amendment freedom of speech rights were being denied when he was forced to pay even though he wasn't in the union. The teacher, Mark Janis, said he didn't agree with the political positions the union was taking and shouldn't be forced to contribute money to fund political activity he didn't agree with. That's even though non-union members' dues or fees aren't permitted to be used for political activity anyway. That's the law. The decision is expected to have major impacts on unions. And we're going to discuss that today with Stephen Herzenberg, who's the executive director of the Keystone Research Center. Mr. Herzenberg, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Scott.
Also joining us is Nathan Benefield, vice president and COO of the Commonwealth Foundation. Mr. Benefield, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
If you have a question or a comment you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, I'm going to start off with the reaction to the Janis Supreme Court ruling. Steve Herzenberg, your reaction to it.
Well, it was the expected decision. Once the Neil Gorsuch became the fifth vote, essentially, for the decision, it's still disappointing. I mean, this is a decision that's part of a decades-old effort to weaken and defund unions as the most powerful voice of working families in the economy and in public policy. It's, you know, an orchestrated attack by extremist ideologues who want even more of our income and wealth to go to a tiny fraction of really rich people and really aren't big fans of democracy. And so those same really rich people and conservative corporations want to dominate our politics even more than they do already. So the silver lining here is this is a message to working families. If they don't organize in the economy and in our politics to retake our democracy, if the people don't come together in response to this decision and other decisions that are likely down the road, then that bodes really poorly for the future of basic American values.
Well, I'm going to, okay, let me turn to Nathan Benefield first before I address some of those things that you just mentioned. But Mr. Benefield, your reaction to the ruling.
Well, yeah, the one thing I agree with what Steve said is this was what the expected outcome was. There had been cases leading up to this that indicated this was the way the court would rule on this in other states. But the reality is this is a win for government workers across the country, that they now, it's protecting their freedom of speech and their choice. They now have the choice whether or not they want to give money and support a political organization. Prior to the Janus ruling, they, government workers in Pennsylvania and 22 other states could be forced to pay money to a union, whether or not they agree with their politics, whether or not they agree with the agenda, whether or not they think the union is working for them, they could be forced to do so or lose their job, be threatened to lose their job. This is basically just returning that choice to them. They are free to join a union, and we encourage those who feel that the union is serving their best interest to go ahead and join and support that right. But they also have the right to refuse to join if they don't want to, and this really reinforces that in across the country.
Stephen Herzenberg, when you said that it goes against democracy, just what Nathan said, that it gives workers more of a choice, that would seem to be more democratic. How is union membership tied to democracy?
Sure. It's already the law that the political contributions that unions make to candidates don't come from dues, never mind from non-members.
Apparently, the Supreme Court disagreed with that.
No, they don't. They don't disagree with that. The political contributions that unions give to politicians don't come from union dues or from fair share dues.
That's
well, there
law.
Are politics spent from dues.
The Nathan, that's the law, Scott. So the political contributions, let's say that unions give to Governor Wolf this year or to George Scott in the congressional district here in the mid-state, those will come from not from dues, not from non-members. Okay, they're voluntary contributions. Let's get that straight. So here's the weeds get complicated, but unions raise people's wages. There's lots of research showing that. Unions fight for public policies like a higher minimum wage, health care for everybody, Social Security, Medicare, middle-class retirement for working people is partly a result of the public policy advocacy of labor unions. So non-members, when they before this decision in the public sector, would pay a small fraction of the benefits they get from unions because of higher wages and benefits, and also the indirect benefits from public policies that benefit working families. They were asked to pay a small contribution to the collective organization that they benefit from. They also benefit from, you know, if they have an individual case with manager, they get represented by the union. So that's what the courts took away. And this was decades of precedent, right? The Supreme Court is supposed to defer to precedent. So they made a series of sort of careful decisions over the year about what constituted political. And, you know, they defined fair share dues sort of in terms of the representational role of unions and public policy advocacy of unions. And so, again, if you step away from those weeds, which, again, I would encourage your audience to do, this is fundamentally a deliberate effort to take order of magnitude $10 million, for example, from public sector unions in Pennsylvania. That means, right now, who's advocating for higher minimum wage in Pennsylvania? Labor unions. Who's advocating for paid family and medical leave in Pennsylvania? Unions. Who's advocating in Philadelphia for fair scheduling? Unions. Who worked with a bunch of airport workers to help them get a union and get a middle class in Philadelphia? Unions. So this is about weakening working families in the economy and in our politics, and that's why it's connected to democracy.
And we're going to talk about those things, but a couple of things you just said there. A small contribution, from what I have seen, most of the time it can be up to 66%. And, you know, your small contribution may not be someone else's small contribution. That's one thing.
I said small contribution relative to the wage and benefit gains. If it's a percentage point or two of salary, some estimates put unions, the wage increase result from unions at 7%. If you look at some specific cases in the service sector, unions double people's wages when they manage to organize a whole janitorial industry. So again, when I said small fraction, it's a small fraction of the direct benefits that those non-members get from the
but
union.
But the Supreme Court said this was a First Amendment freedom of speech, that Janice's freedom of speech was being denied, or you know, that he was being harmed by this. And let me go back to something you said. You mentioned two Democratic candidates. Most unions, public sector unions, endorse Democratic candidates. Obviously, there are Republicans in those unions. Who talks for them? Who speaks for them?
Unions sometimes support Republican candidates.
When was the last governor in this state that was other than in a primary? I'm thinking back to Tom Ridge, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, there certainly were some unions that supported Tom Ridge's reelection. But listen, unions support policies that benefit working families, including their members. And so whether or not they support a candidate is going to be not, it's not based on the party of the candidate, it's based on the public policy positions. So Daryl Metcalf, or, you know, a Republican representative from Western Pennsylvania, or, you know, or Mike Terzai, who's the Speaker of the House, both of those folks are known to be pretty conservative. Unions aren't going to support those folks because they don't want a minimum wage, they don't like prevailing wage for construction workers, they don't support expanding, you know, Medicaid expansion in Pennsylvania. They don't support a set of policies that benefit union members and working families.
There probably are members of that union that do support those candidates, is the point I'm making. I mean, when there's a union contract being voted on, all the members get to vote. Union endorses a candidate, the members don't get to vote on that.
Well, first of all,
Nathan, by the way, I'm coming to you soon.
So whether or not you have a union in the first place is based on a majority vote of the people in, you know, that are represented by the union. So people always have a voice. They can become active in the union if they don't like the policies of their current union steward or the current president of their local. They can challenge that person or get behind somebody else. This is... The Supreme Court in the past made a series of judgment calls around collective rights.
This overturned a decision.
So earlier Supreme Court decisions had indicated for decades that this the fair share contributions from non-members that now are illegal, that those didn't violate people's First Amendment rights. So this is a judgment call made by an extremely conservative Supreme Court, which values collective rights of working people not at all, and in its extremist interpretation of individual free speech rights is supporting the right-wing engineering, Commonwealth Foundation, etc., engineering of an America with even more inequality and a politics that's even more responsive to the donor class and big corporations. Congratulations for undermining the American dream and for undermining democracy in one of its birthplaces.
Now, Nathan, I'm going to get on to a lot of things that Steve's saying there, but one of the big points, one of the big arguments in this case and others is just something that Stephen had mentioned earlier, that even if you are not a member of the union and you're not paying full union dues or fees, you do benefit from the contract that the union has negotiated. Shouldn't those workers have to contribute something if they're benefiting from it?
Well, there are two points I want to respond to that. One is that Steve made the case like, oh, the union negotiations benefit members getting higher wages, higher benefits, better benefits because of the union's negotiation on their ability to negotiate collectively. That is the message that unions should take to their employees or prospective members now to show them the benefits. And those members now have the choice whether or not they believe that, whether or not they want to join, whether or not they want to pay. If the unions can demonstrate that they are indeed representing their members well, and they are getting them better benefits, they will not have to worry about losing members and losing money. The second part, I think, of your question is that there is in state law the requirement that they have to cover all represent all individuals in the unit. There is legislation to change that, to say that the union only has to represent its members and does not have to have this exclusive.
But that's not okay. There may be legislation, but right now, dealing with this case and this ruling, I want to get to the point how you address. Okay, you said that basically what you're saying is this ruling will make the union more accountable, and we're going to talk about that. But still, if I'm someone that, I'm working for a company for years, okay, since we're talking public sector, working for the government, or I'm a teacher, working for years, never had a problem at work or anything like that, I get a nice raise that the union has negotiated, but I'm not a member of the union. Is that fair that I benefit from that contract that's been negotiated?
Well, this is where I think a lot of the non-members question whether they are actually getting the benefit. There actually have been studies that show that collective bargaining in the public sector and among teachers specifically hasn't actually led to higher wages, higher salaries.
Why not?
Because the main conclusion was that states that have collective bargaining already had higher salaries for teachers. And so the difference between states with collective bargaining and states that have basically had right to work is explained entirely by just the wealth of the state and other other factors that have led to those differences in salaries are explained not by by the collective bargaining laws that they have in those states.
All right, we're going to talk more about that. Take some phone calls in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision last month, Janus versus AFSCME. The Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that non-union public sector employees did not have to pay union dues or fees, but they still are. They're not part of the union, but as heard here, that there are some unions that do represent those people when they do have some kind of argument or a problem with a school district or with the government, their employer. Our guests today are Nathan Benefield, Vice President and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation, Stephen Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center. 1-800-729-7532 is our phone number. If you have a question or a comment, you can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a call from Andy in New Cumberland. Andy, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I have a question. Seems to me I've heard a lot that the Janus decision was about the First Amendment and was not about hurting unions, and yet you hear now in light of the Janus decision that there are folks out there connected with the Koch brothers and so forth who are out encouraging union members to drop their membership. That doesn't really make sense to me. I'd like somebody to explain to me what's going on there.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. All right. So let's talk about that, because that question fits into our conversation about what this decision will mean for the future. And there are a lot of people who have speculated that it will mean that, number one, unions will have to be more accountable to their members, but that there will be people who will either be encouraged or will actually come out and quit the union because they'll get the same benefits. Nathan, what about that?
Well, there are in Pennsylvania about 330,000 government employees represented by unions. About 30,000 of those are non-members currently. Some of those are fair share fee payers. Some of them may not be. In the local area, there's about 28,000 in the Harrisburg market, with about 4,000 non-members who are basically going to be immediately out. That they have, at the state level, and the governor's office has issued a edict. They will now stop collecting those fair share fees from those members. Most school districts, I think, are following that. I know the School Boards Association has said we'll stop collecting that. So that is kind of the immediate impact. But I know that some of the unions are saying we're going to go out to try and reach those non-members and tell them they should join again, that they will lose their benefits if they don't. And then there are, you know, the question of are there more individuals who want to leave, and now that they don't have to pay anything, feel that they are disconnected with the unions and with the politics the unions have and with the issues the union supports that they disagree with, whether or not they want to support that or not, and they have that choice. And yeah, there are groups that are trying to inform them of their rights, that they have the right to leave, and that is what the court ruled. That is their First Amendment protection.
Inform or encourage?
It is informing. It is a big effort to inform union members. You know, I know Steve has his little chuckle going there, but they have the right, and this is part of doing the show is to inform all workers that they are now given that right, that protection, that they no longer have to support an organization. They're going to be forced to support an organization's politics if they don't believe in them.
So let's just put what the caller said and what Nathan's response was. Let's make sure people understand that in plain English. What the caller said, and Nathan knows is correct, which is why he didn't contradict it, is that deep-pocketed right-wing extremists like the Koch brothers are funding campaigns, including on the ground in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to guess that that some of the other organizations, not the Commonwealth Foundation, because it's a so-called nonprofit educational kind of organization, but some affiliated organizations will be doing some of this work. And they are absolutely going to be going door to door and trying to get not just fair share dues payers to keep not being members and therefore contribute nothing, but they're going to be trying to explain to union dues paying members that they too can get a free ride. This is a decades old, bloody minded effort to weaken working people in the economy and in politics. And that door-to-door campaign is sort of is a vivid illustration of how determined these folks are. They have very deep pockets. Again, hopefully, this decision and even some of that door-to-door campaigning, hopefully it will backfire. Basically, more working people in your audience or some of those people answering those doors will see, hey, this is a bunch of filthy, rich people who are extraordinarily selfish and want an economy and a politics that works only for them. And I'm not buying their nonsense. I want to become a dues-paying member. I want to become active in politics. That's unless people need to react to this kind of attack on unions and on working families, need to react by connecting the dots and organizing. If they don't, we've got deep concerns about the future of our country.
Steve, think about it now. People can make their own individual decisions. I mean, what you're describing here sounds, to some people, probably conspiratorial.
It's not conspiratorial.
Well, why not? You just said that, here's what they're trying to do. Here's what they're going to do.
So why not address
the issue itself and say that, you know, individuals are going to have to make their own decisions now about the benefits that they can get from union membership?
They are, but they're going to make those decisions partly influenced by people who are deeply committed to persuading those people not to be part of a union and to feeding people a narrative and an ideology that says if there are any benefits, you get them anyway, and the union doesn't do anything for you, and they're going to basically try to get people represented by unions to, in my view, delude them into not understanding that belonging to the union and contributing to the union is actually in their self-interest as well as the community's interest.
Nathan, are you anti-union? Is the Commonwealth Foundation anti-union?
No, absolutely not.
Give me an example of why you're not.
Well, we believe that people should have the choice to join a union and form a union. You know, if they want to form a union, that should be their choice, their individual choice, and they have the facts. And we are working to give people the facts about unions, and that's there are many things that Steve has said that is just factually incorrect, that unions do use dues on politics. They report this themselves. They give, for instance, the PSEA has reported on their LM2 to the Department of Labor that they spent $3 million last year on political activity and lobbying. Now, they can't give directly to candidates, but they do support causes, they do support lobbying, and they do, in fact, give grants to the Keystone Research Center. And that is, I think, the difference between Steve and I, that we absolutely believe that every individual should be able to voluntarily give to a cause that they support and not be forced to support political causes that they don't agree with.
All right, let me ask you this. Hold on for a second.
Sure.
Let me ask you this. And this is a question out of left field. Point to an industry for me. It doesn't have to be public sector. Point to an industry that probably could use more union membership.
That could use more union membership?
Yeah.
You want some help?
All right, well, I'll ask you the same question in the opposite. One where the union has really not helped. I doubt you're going to give me an answer on that, but where a union has not really helped their workers.
Yeah, again, we view unions as a fundamental part of democracy. They're a form of collective worker voice, which in our mind strengthens democracy. People used to call it industrial democracy.
But you can't think of anyone where I'm thinking of, okay, and just off the top of my head, I'm thinking of, and I'm not going to name a company, but where pension benefits, where someone has worked for 30 years and lost their pension benefits.
No, again, our read of where unions have struggled, let's say in some manufacturing sectors after the 1970s in the U.S., our view is that unions were in some sense too weak in some situations. In European countries like Germany, for example, when basic steel went to Brazil or South Korea and other parts of the globe, the German unions were strong enough to help. They even have representation on the boards in Germany, and they were able to encourage their companies to reposition in higher value-added markets. And so, mm-hmm. and the U.S. industrial manufacturing unions were sometimes too defensive. But so I'll give you that.
Okay.
But
hold on just one second. Now, by the way, if you're calling in, be patient because we'll get to your calls. Just want to get to some basic questions here before we go on to your phone calls. I'm always looking for areas where we agree.
I'm not going to give you that, but I do want to respond to one thing. One thing.
Wait a minute.
Let me partly agree with one thing that Nathan said, but then end up disagreeing with it. Sort of, So Nathan made the point, you've made the point, that in the end it's up to, it should be up to the individual worker to decide whether they belong to the union.
And he's That's nodding, not my point. I was asking a question.
He's nodding his head, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But the thing I want to point out is, in most countries, the laws and the court decisions basically leave that decision to the worker. The U.S. is an absolute outlier in terms of how much it allows employers, and in this case, right-wing organizations, to weigh in on the decision. In other countries like Canada, for example, which makes it easier to join unions, one analogy was made that Canadians care about U.S. elections, but they don't get to vote in them. So employers care whether workers vote for a union or not, but they shouldn't have the right to intimidate workers into not belonging to a union, which, again, in the private sector in the U.S., unions can have what are called captive audience meetings, small meetings with supervisors and unions. The penalties for firing union people because of union activity, which is in theory against the law, are like back pay minus what you should have earned for the job you might have got. So basically there are, there's studies showing that basic U.S. labor rights violate international human rights standards and labor rights standards because employers have so much power to coerce people into not belonging to a union. That's got a lot to do with the growth of inequality in this country. And to some extent, the Janus decision and the follow-up to the Janus decision are bringing that kind of ability for other parties. It's the workers' decision whether to join a public sector union or a private sector. But Nathan wants, and other people want, let's open up the door to let all kinds of other people with really deep pockets to intimidate people into not joining a union.
I first of all, I'll let him answer that. But let me before we take some phone calls, follow up on things, a couple of things. Statistically, union membership is at, I saw somewhere, an all-time low here in Pennsylvania. I don't know if that's talking about the private sector, but it is lower than what it used to be. Why? Steve, I'll have
you. I just gave part of the reason. Part of the reason is the weakness of union rights in the U.S.
So you're
economy.
You don't think the unions have anything to do with that? Their performance?
You could say that since the manufacturing economy, you could argue that they haven't adapted as well as they might have. I mean, they're trying to. So a lot of it is the U.S. gives employers extraordinary power, including over the decision about whether workers quote choose to join a union. That is a central reason that union membership has declined. People in your audience don't know. If you want to get a union in a nursing home in South Carolina, if you want to get a union in a meatpacking plant in North Carolina, and again, partly, these used to be stories from the South, but if I was more up on recent union organizing campaigns in Pennsylvania, I could probably tell you more stories that from Pennsylvania. People making $8, $10 an hour have to show extraordinary courage to stand up to intimidating college-educated managers and guns for hire anti-union law firms that come in with their sleek videos about how unions are
evil. By the way, you're holding your hands up like Sally Field.
Sorry, I'm happy to. We have pictures of that.
But Nathan, but let me just follow up on that. When I ask Steve about why union membership is down, let's face it, in this country, wages have been stagnant. Wages have not gone up, and you can go back to 2008, but they have been stagnant. One of the reasons pointed to that wages have been stagnant and haven't moved up is because unions have less power. There are fewer people represented by unions today. First of all, do you agree with that? Secondly, why are wages stagnant?
Well, I do not agree that that's a main cause of why wages have been stagnant. And here's why. Well, here's why wages have been stagnant. If you look at broader data on income, incomes have not been stagnant. The incomes have gone up. Now, I'd say that's an exemption from the last 15.
Incomes of who, though?
Of Americans across the board. Household income has gone up. And the reason, like, one of the differences in wages is that a lot more of the costs have been going into employee benefits. So pensions, health care, those other things don't count as wages, but that is a lot of where the cost for workers has gone up. And certainly at the state level, You see that in fact, at Pennsylvania state level, the cost of benefits compared to salary is astronomical. That the salaries have gone up very little, but the benefit costs have done so.
And that's a given. But let's talk about income inequality. Yeah. Steve touched on this earlier, where I might not put it in the terms that he did exactly, but that we do know that if you look at income distribution across the board, that the people who are making the highest incomes, their incomes continue to increase at a higher rate than those in the middle or below, but in the middle. So, again, people would point to the lack of union membership, the strength of unions, as a reason for that.
Well, two things. One is we don't believe income inequality in itself is a problem if the incomes of everyone is going up. We want prosperity for all. And if the poor, and again, obviously there's movement between who's the poor and who's the rich in any given year. But the opportunity, as long as if they're all getting richer, that's a good thing to see. Now, what we might be concerned about is income mobility, of being able to go, between classes, moving from lower income to higher income and vice versa.
Well, that's one of the problems that we have.
Now, I will say, in terms of union strength, it's interesting when we talk about having the choice and having right to work, that states like Michigan had been losing union jobs and jobs overall for decades. When they went right to work, they actually gained union jobs. Because they gain jobs overall, companies moving back into Michigan because of that better economic climate, and that is the thing that if you want to grow the economy, yes, it's going to grow union jobs. It's going to grow jobs overall, and that is by having more economic freedom, having more choice, giving individuals that choice and that freedom.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Stephen Herzenberg, Executive Director of the Keystone Research Center, Nathan Benefield, Vice President and COO of the Commonwealth Foundation. We're talking about the Supreme Court ruling last month, Janus versus AFSCME. The ruling came down that Janus did not, or his free speech was violated because he was a non-union member and he was paying dues or fees into that union. Don't want to get into too much of the weeds with the case itself, but we're talking about what that impact is from that Supreme Court ruling, and talking about some other kind of broad issues, those issues from the 40,000 foot level. 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I promise. We're going to get your phone calls now. Joe is in Camp Hill. Joe, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. So I was calling because I believe it was Stephen was appealing to international standards and popularity and democracy. But fortunately, the standard in Janus and the standard in the United States is the Constitution. And in the Constitution, you're protected against compelled speech. This is really not an attack on unions, but it's a defense of the rights enumerated to individuals under the Constitution. Liberals don't tend to talk about the Constitution. It's the fundamental protection against compelled speech and problems with our rights. So I'd like to hear what he says about the Constitution.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Steve.
Again, he's back in the weeds. We already talked about the fact that the Supreme Court in the past made judgment calls about weighing individual free speech rights against collective rights, and had viewed that requiring non-members to pay something towards the union that lifts their wages and fights for policies that that help working people was not a violation of people's free speech rights. Listen, I have a 401k where I invest in a little piece of the stock market. I get no voice about whether or not the companies on the stock market weigh in politics in ways that I agree with. Most of them don't. So again, you make judgment calls in the law. I think in the context of the balancing act between collective rights and individual rights, the Supreme Court made the wrong decision. And in a country where, again, wealth and income inequality are now approaching the highest level ever in U.S. history, about 1929, and where intergeneration income mobility, to go back to an issue that you and Nathan talked about, is now much less than almost all European countries, we are, the American dream is on life support. American democracy is in somewhat critical condition. The Supreme Court made the wrong call. people in response have to organize in the economy, have to organize in politics, have to get support from politicians that believe in workers' rights and unions. That's got to be the silver lining, and it's the only way we're going to restore the American dream and American responsive democracy.
Phyllis is in Mount Gretna. Phyllis, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. As a personal opinion, I think that this whole pro-union argument is based on emotion and appeals to the victim mentality, which is pretty ubiquitous in the United States nowadays. My comment is that I worked for 25 years in an industry that was not unionized. Our individual wages were based on our individual job performance. I do not support collective bargaining in which poorly performing employees reap the same benefits and get the same salary as exceptionally good performing employees. I have had some experience in a union environment when I worked for a state agency, and it was not the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And my experience of unions is that they help underperforming employees keep their jobs.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. This is an argument that has been made from the very beginning against unions.
I respectfully disagree with the caller. If you know well about particular cases of people forming a union, a strong union, it's the opposite of supporting a victim mentality. What happens is people develop a sense of confidence. It's an exercise in democracy. So people realize they have leadership ability. They have the confidence to speak out. They can say something to a college-educated, you know, manager who makes 3 or 5 or 20 times as much as they do. So, and many workplaces, unions actually really do discipline workers that don't do their share. In the construction trades, the basic model we have of unions, I mean, this country is very heavy on you got to go to an apprenticeship. There's real respect for craft. And basically, if you don't pull your weight and aren't a good worker, you're going to have trouble getting another job.
But can management do that in a union setting?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very complicated. But again, speaking in broad terms, a good, strong union forces management to follow due process. If you have bad management, what I call A management, as in people who don't manage, because you get a lot of that in professions like mine when people get promoted from economist to sort of manager. I hope that's not true of me. So what happens a lot is you get people who don't do a good job. They don't do annual reviews. Right. They don't call people on their failure to perform in year 1, year 2, year 3, and therefore they have trouble firing them in year 4. So again, this gets very weedy. But the fundamental issue is I really do disagree with when unions were strong, working families in places like Detroit and Akron, you know, and Pittsburgh and Steelton. I mean, if you knew personally the members of those unions and the stewards and the union leaders, you would know. You would feel in your bones that's an expression of democracy. And again, exactly the opposite of a victim mentality.
I just want to say, what I agree with the call is that I think Steve is conflating a lot of when unions formed in companies 100 years ago that were very abusive of their rights and needed to form and needed to protect themselves in the private sector versus what we're talking about here in the public sector and compelling individuals to join that union in the public beyond simply having a union hasn't changed but is forcing people to do, whether to join or not. And where the caller, I think, raises some points is that a lot of union members in the public sector, teachers, for instance, aren't happy with the way the union has negotiated pay scales, where everyone gets the same raise based on their seniority, rather than allowing merit pay, paying better teachers more, and even being able to negotiate themselves.
All right, let's take some more phone calls here. Rich is in Marysville. Rich, you're on the air.
Making it simple, residents of many municipalities are required to purchase trash services from Senator Wagner's trash company. He uses those funds to support his political activity against the opinions of many of the the customers that are forced to pay for them. And there are more complex examples of contractors your town might hire to, say, pave a road, something like that, who uses their money for political purposes. Is the Commonwealth Foundation going to do something to try to let people avoid making those kind of payments, say, opt out of paying 25% of Senator Wagner's fees?
Thank you very much for your call, Nathan.
Well, I think, the one question the caller is should we treat unions as entities of government? That yes, government can compel people to pay taxes and pay fees for services. Should we? Is that what the way the unions working on supposed to be on behalf of members should be treated? That they are as an arm of government. In regards to some of those contracts, yeah, we would support greater competition when there are contracts, and yes, giving more of that choice to individuals rather than to government. I think if you look at our record and in terms of when we want. Suggested areas where there could be privatization of services that are provided by government that need not be, that has been a pretty consistent record.
Let me go to an email here. I'm a member of Amazon Prime and get benefits for the fee I pay each year. If I disagree with positions Amazon takes from a corporate position based on my freedom of speech rights, should I be exempt from paying them money but still expect to get the benefits from being a Prime member? I think this is something similar to last caller. That is just what happened in this Supreme Court decision. Non-members of unions will still get the benefits and protections that everyone else in the union pays for, but they will be exempt from paying for the benefits and protections. That is unfair. I'm a dues-paying member of PSEA. You kind of addressed those. Nicole says, it seems only fair that those benefiting from union wages and benefits pay their fair share. Unions support Democrats because Democrats support unions. If you're Republican and work for a union, you should be advocating to Republican candidates on these issues. It shouldn't be just Democrats who support worker issues. Let's see. Craig says, so if my free speech rights protect me from paying union dues, can I deduct the price of goods? And this is kind of along the same lines. We have a lot of people asking these same questions. Let's take some more phone calls. Let's see. We have Preston is in Lebanon. Preston, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm on the line.
Go ahead, Preston.
Yes, I have two quick comments. One, I think every worker in Pennsylvania has benefited from union activity. The union activity creates good wages for certain industries, and the other industries that aren't represented still have to kind of respond to the better wages the other people are getting, or they'll lose the good workers. Secondly, speaking of people not respecting history, if anybody remembers what the Molly Maguires were about, unions now are the civil way of addressing inequalities, and if you don't do that, it goes the other way.
Thank you very much for your call. Now, you've addressed a lot of these things. We're just letting people have their say here. Let's go to Pashia, who is here in Pennsylvania. Pashia, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
The questions I had was, what can we do in Pennsylvania to push back against these attacks, and how do we make sure that workers can still join a labor union?
Thank you very much for your call. Now, Steve, you kind of addressed this, and quite frankly, I don't want you to campaign for union membership, but just, you know, someone who has a question who would maybe be interested.
Sure. So, I do think this decision raises the stakes, and so it that working people and their supporters among public officials need to step up, and so people should organize more. If they're an Uber driver or a taxi driver or a contingent faculty member or a healthcare worker or a childcare worker or a fast food worker or a retail worker, you know, in all of those industries, basically the jobs can't move away. So if a lot of people join a union in a certain area, they can actually double their wages. That's the way we're getting back a middle class. So I think what people need to do, there's a lot of organizing campaigns going on, including in Pennsylvania now, of healthcare workers, contingent faculty, et cetera. So they need to organize, and public officials need to have their back in a much bigger way, both in specific campaigns, saying, you know, I want the mayor of Pittsburgh and the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, I think they should be out in Pittsburgh saying, if I was a UPMC worker today, I'd join a union. That and they need to be looking at what they can do in terms of...
That is a situation where there has been a lot of controversy going on.
UPMC is now the biggest healthcare provider in Pennsylvania. Right. They've been adamantly anti-union, doing all the things that companies generally in the private sector do to intimidate and coerce workers into not joining a union. And so, just to try to get back to the caller's question again, I'm just saying that workers like her and the public officials who believe that in workers' collective rights and in unions, both of them are going to have to step up more in this new context.
Nathan, you, both Steve and you talked about this earlier, but not to counter that, but as a result of this ruling, what are you advising?
Well, I think to call this question, that there is nothing that has stopped workers from joining a union or forming a union. This doesn't change that at all. It is simply about the choice whether or not to join, whether or not to support a union. So one hand, I would encourage individual workers to be aware of their rights, that they now have the right to leave a union, to not have to pay money, or to even challenge their leadership saying, hey, I will leave unless you change some of your positions and some of your political activity. And for the union leadership, I would advise them to actually try and look more at why some members are leaving, why some members have chosen to opt out. Is it the politics? Is it that they're focused so much nationally and not locally? One of the records I have is focused locally, that most people think of the union as their local representative fighting in the local. But most of the dues money and the fair share money has gone to the state leadership and the national leadership of those unions, which are much more political creatures than the local union.
You know, one thing we touched on, but we really didn't talk too much about, is accountability. Nathan, you kind of talked about this earlier, but Stephen, let me ask you that question. There are those who are saying that what this ruling will do is make unions more accountable. Now, accountability, it can be judged in different ways, but will this do that? Will union management, the leadership of unions, have to come back to their members and say, okay, here's what we've done for you, here's what we're going to do for you, and, you know, as far as the politics go, still, more accountability.
So it will force unions to spend more of their diminished resources making the case every day to their members for why belonging to the union benefits them on the job and off the job. So, you know, could there be some silver linings in that? Maybe so. Again, the immediate effect is a deliberate consequence, is to reduce the resources of unions in a lot of public policy.
Okay, now you say the deliberate effect. It makes it sound like the Supreme Court is in cahoots with...
Scott, I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Yes, okay, well, yes, but that's what it's sounding like.
Well, okay, so again, you need to read up on the campaigns that are now going to be going on in Michigan and Pennsylvania
and
Ohio.
I know exactly what's going on. What I'm saying to you is that the Supreme Court, unless you're saying that they legislated here, they based their decision, now whether it's right or wrong, on the Constitution.
Again, they came up with their own interpretation of the Constitution, and if you read the Alito decision in the Janus case, you know, it's clear that he's not done trying to diminish unions' collective rights. And so, fine, he's got his own view about how he's doing what the founders would have wanted, and we all have our own rationalizations. But again, I think there's a fair number of people. There's different degrees of self-consciousness about. An awareness about the fact that this decision and similar decisions end up weakening unions in the economy and in politics. But there's plenty of people who are well aware that that's what they're doing.
We have a minute to go, and we covered a lot of territory here. I'm sorry we didn't get to all our calls and a lot of emails. If you'd like to send in some emails. So, gentlemen, in about 30 seconds or less, bottom line with this decision, Nathan?
Well, I think especially given this region does have a lot of state workers and public sector employees, that they are aware that their rights have changed, that they are free to join a union and pay, or they are free to opt out and not have to pay any money to that union.
Steve, 30 seconds.
So I would urge all of those public sector workers listening to become members of their union if they're not already. The bottom line here is unions created the middle class, brought you the weekend. Looking forward, the only way we're getting back to an economy that works for all is with a rebound in unionism. So that's why people need to respond to this decision by organizing in the economy and in politics.
Gentlemen, I enjoyed the conversation. I hope our audience did too. I hope you had a good time with us here today. We're not here to have good times all the time, but we end up doing that anyway. Stephen Herzenberg is the executive director of the Keystone Research Center. Nathan Benefield, vice president and CEO of the Commonwealth Foundation. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll be talking about a new report out on air quality here in Pennsylvania and central Pennsylvania in particular. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in.